Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. State lawmakers are coming closer to passing a bill that would ban the sale of flavored vaping and tobacco products and enact an excise tax on e-cigarettes. The Massachusetts House voted overwhelmingly last week to approve the ban, and the Senate is expected to vote on it on Wednesday. Massachusetts Senator John Kenan is the lead sponsor of the Senate bill. He joins us now from the State House. Senator Kenan, hello there.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. And how about you?
Very well, thanks.
Also with us is Dr. Hasmina Kathuria, who is the director of the Tobacco Treatment Center at Boston Medical Center and an associate professor of pulmonary medicine at Boston University School of Medicine. Dr. Kathuria, hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we should note that we reached out to e-cigarette maker Juul and tobacco company R.J. Reynolds today for comment, but we didn't hear back from either of them in time for this segment. Now, before I turn to the panel, we also want to hear from you. Do you think the state should ban the sale of all flavored e-cigarettes, cigars, menthol cigarettes? Will this help curb youth smoking, or is the state overstepping? And how do we balance public health and safety, especially of minors, with the public's demand for these products, with the interests of business owners? It's complicated. Call and join the conversation. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. All right, Senator Kenan, I'd like to start with you. Why push this legislation and why now?
Well, we have seen an entire generation of young people become addicted to nicotine products. We have made great progress over the course of many years in reducing nicotine use among teenagers, and particularly through tobacco products. And all that has been reversed and, in fact, lost with the introduction of e-cigarettes, and particularly e-cigarettes with flavored e-liquids.
Senator, one of the things that is notable, you talked about e-cigarettes, e-liquids, but one of the things that is notable about this ban is the inclusion of mint and menthol cigarettes. Why include those?
Back in 2009, there was an effort to ban all flavored traditional tobacco products, meaning cigarettes. The industry went down, lobbied hard, and kept menthol alive. And over the course of the last 10 years, while overall youth use of tobacco products has declined, youth use of menthol cigarettes has shown a steady increase. And so as we address e-liquids and nicotine on the vaping side, young people are going to go somewhere as long as there's something that remains. And they will go to menthol cigarettes. The industry will target them with menthol cigarettes. And they'll go to other tobacco devices and products that use menthol and mint. So an across-the-board ban is the most effective way to address it.
Okay, and if this is so pernicious and so prevalent among young people, why not ban all tobacco products?
There's been some discussion about that. We're having a difficult enough time with this bill and the pushback, although I am optimistic that the bill will pass on Wednesday and make its way to the governor's desk. But we're really looking at the specific issue of young people being targeted with dangerous, highly addictive nicotine products and being targeted with those products through flavors. And so that's what we're really focusing on.
So, Dr. Kathuria, I'd like to bring you in. You're in favor of the ban as it's proposed. Tell us why.
Absolutely. Well, most importantly, we know that 90% of adult tobacco dependent users started smoking before the age of 18. And as the senator just commented, we have made such efforts in tobacco control. Youth, the smoking prevalence had been down to 5.8%, marked improvement through tobacco control. And what we're seeing now with the introduction of e-cigarettes is those numbers are up to 27%, and it's largely because of flavorings. We know that fruit, sweet, mint, menthol flavors are the big reason why kids get addicted to these products, and regulating these products and getting them off the market, getting flavored products off the market, would be a huge win for tobacco control.
So I think I want to ask you the same question I asked the senator. You just gave numbers that said prior to vaping, you know, we were down to 5% use, now back up over 20. That would clearly make the case for the vaping portion of this legislation. But again, it also includes mint and menthol cigarettes. Why include those when they've been used for generations?
So when we look at mint and menthol flavors, they're the second most popular flavor. So 63.9% of high school youth use mint and menthol flavors. And that's only second to fruit flavors, which is 65.9%. So I think it's really important to understand that the flavors that our youth are using include mint and menthol flavors.
Dr. Kathuria, is there a public health risk that people don't already understand about the use of these kinds of tobacco products? Do we need to be reminded?
So, one, we know that nicotine in youth is bad. We know it has effects on brain development. We know that people who use e-cigarettes, adolescents, they go on to use combustible cigarettes. We know that there's an increase in other drug use in patients and smokers and vapers who use these products, including prescription drugs, marijuana use, and others. So I think the implication of using nicotine products, not only on the health effects of nicotine itself in the developing brain and in youth, the tobacco-related health consequences of adults with, you know, smoking-related disease, but also the use and the uptake of other addiction is another very important element.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Richie from Plimpton, you're on with Senator Keenan and Dr. Kathuria. What's on your mind?
Hi there. Yes. You know, right when Big Tobacco got sued so much, and I thought, hooray. I'm a non-smoker, and I thought, great. And I started hearing that the amount of young people getting on cigarettes was dropping, and I was like, yes. And then at the time, I had a son-in-law. He started a stepson. He started vaping. And he was vaping like while we were in restaurants and stuff, and I thought it was stupid. And he got hooked on that. But anyway, more recently now, a girlfriend that I have. Both of her sons, one is 17, the other is 22, they're both vaping. They live in South Carolina. And they said, go ahead, get rid of all the cotton candy, get rid of all the flavors, because they like the fact that the tobacco-flavored one, the non-flavored one, has caramel in it.
All right, let's pick it up from there, Richie. Thank you. And Senator Keenan, I'll turn to you. Two pieces to what Richie had to say that I think are interesting. One, again, I think he's saying, hey, even the unflavored stuff is appealing to young people. What do we do about that? I also noticed that he was talking about young people who are in South Carolina. This puts Massachusetts on the cutting edge of this issue, this ban would, does it not?
This ban would put Massachusetts on the cutting edge. And to the question, to the issue of young people who seem to like tobacco flavor itself, that's a pretty distinct minority of youth users. The youth, students, young people are using more flavors that are attractive to children, not so much the tobacco. I think the number is somewhere about 60% of young people are using flavors. 80% of them were introduced to the product by flavors. And so while we may hear stories of a few that like the tobacco flavor, overwhelmingly the data suggests young people are attracted by the nearly 5,000 flavors that are out there. Some estimates that are even as high as 15,000 different flavors that are out there.
And do I understand you, Senator, that there is just no way to build the public will to ban all types of tobacco?
I think that would be the case. But we were making great progress towards limiting the amount of tobacco that was being used by people. We heard, you know, the doctor had mentioned that it was down to about 5.8% among young people. And what that meant is over the course of the next generation, the generation followed, that number would drop even more. And so we would have seen a lot of progress towards eliminating tobacco without having to ban it. But the industry has introduced a new product, and we've seen those trends reverse. And that's what's alarming.
You know, I really do want to bring in the perspective of those who have been selling these products and what will happen to their livelihoods. Earlier this month, hundreds of convenience stores closed for a day in response to the proposed ban. We spoke earlier with Francisco Marte, president of the Boston Convenience Store Owners Association. He owns a store in Dorchester, and he said that sales of mint and menthol tobacco for a convenience store in his neighborhood make up 25% to 35% of gross sales. So obviously a loss like that would be devastating for business owners. Dr. Kathuria, how do we balance the need to address public health concerns with the legitimate concerns of small business owners who have built their livelihoods on a product that has been legal for them to sell?
Yes, I think that, you know, always losing business is devastating to hear. But I think a policy perspective, when I see the 30% menthol users, that's That's high, and that is what the tobacco market is. It's about 25 to 30% of their sales do go to menthol products. I work at a large safety net hospital, the largest safety net hospital in New England, Boston Medical Center. And when we look at our menthol users, you know, we've only begun to sort of look at this. So we've only looked at 500 smokers out of 4,500 hospitalized smokers each year. About 70% of our smokers use menthol products. And so it's exactly what the senator said. When you leave a product on the market, people are going to switch. The targeting of African Americans, we have a large African American population. We see that, you know, advertising to this population, to their youth, has really had, you know, devastating consequences. They have large healthcare disparities and smoking-related disease. So I think including a menthol ban as part of the flavorings is a very important part of tobacco control. You know, we've talked about how the smoking prevalence has decreased to 5.8%. In adults nationally, it's about 16%. But when you look at the population of smokers that we take care of, it's as high as 30%. And a large amount of those product uses are menthol flavors. So I think it's important to recognize that.
Senator Keenan, you have focused in your comments today predominantly on the ban in relationship to youth use. The doctor has raised some additional issues, for example, use of menthol cigarettes in the African American community. Did you consider the effects on communities other than youth tobacco users as you were designing this legislation, this ban?
Yes, when you, and particularly in communities of color, yes, menthol use is greater, but menthol use by young people in communities of color makes up the vast majority of menthol use. So they are being targeted, and particularly young people within those communities. And so I know the convenience stores are making the argument that they will suffer financially as a result of this. But up until a couple of years ago, these products weren't all that widespread, and convenience stores were doing well. They're doing better now because they are selling these products. But I look at the jobs that go with the convenience stores, and we recognize and we appreciate what they do in our communities. But at the same time, we have about 9,300 people per year in Massachusetts that die related to smoking health consequences. We spend over $4 billion per year in health care costs related to smoking. And on average, there's a cost to each household of almost $1,000, even households that don't smoke. $1,000 per household to basically cover the cost that's related with smoking. So it's time to break that cycle. And the best way to do that is to make sure that kids aren't being targeted and make sure the generation isn't being hooked on these products.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Carlos in North Attleboro, you're on the line with Senator Keenan and Dr. Kathuria. What's on your mind?
Hi, my question is probably more for the senator. I'm more concerned with the enforcement of this, looking and reading over it as I have. It seems like you're putting the onus on the person who has the device. Many people who vape have devices which are made for multi-use that maybe they've had for a year or two. If they were to be caught with a device, they would have had this device well before the law was in place. And I'm a little concerned that, you know, they're not going to have receipts, not going to be able to show where they purchased it, how they purchased it. And not only will they have the device taken away, but the way the law currently reads, it looks like you'll be able to confiscate vehicles, personal property, and other things with it. And that doesn't quite seem like it goes in tone with the whole idea that this is about age.
Thanks for that call, Carlos. Let's turn back to Senator Keenan. What are the penalties built into the legislation for people who are caught with banned devices or products?
Well, the penalties focus on the illegal sale of e-cigarettes. So if a store, for instance, is selling products illegally without paying the tax on them, was selling flavored products that they're most not supposed to, was selling to underage individuals, there'll be penalties of $1,000, $2,000, up to $5,000 for first, second, and third offenses. And those stores may lose the ability to sell lottery tickets. As far as the issue that's been raised about confiscation of vehicles and homes, we're looking at that. That is not something that's intended with this bill. There's no desire or intent, if somebody's caught with a flavored e-liquid, to confiscate the car because they happen to be in the car. That's not the intent of it. And we're going to make sure that the language clearly addresses those issues. We're looking to penalize those that are selling products that they shouldn't be selling. And for those that are importing into Massachusetts products from out of state in large quantities, and making sure that they're not able to do that or discourage them from doing that. And one of the ways to do it is to make sure there's this progressive penalties associated with that conduct.
I want to get one more call in. Jason from Acton, pull up a seat to the table. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my phone call. I wanted to ask the senator a question. The largest contributor, it seems so far, and the argument for banning these vape products seems to be the healthcare costs and the overall social costs. I wanted to ask if there's any research in how much it costs for heart disease or vehicle accidents when it comes to the healthcare system, and if you're intending to ban the causes or the practices that lead to these, since that seems to be the general consensus for the vape products.
Jason, I'm not sure I understand your question. Do you mean are we looking at banning other things that also cause high healthcare costs, deaths, et cetera?
Correct.
Okay, let me turn to the senator. Go ahead.
Sure. We have. In Massachusetts, for instance, we have a law that requires individuals to wear seatbelts. And why? Because they put themselves at risk if they don't wear a seatbelt. They put others at risk if they don't wear a seatbelt. And the consequences of not wearing a seatbelt, if there's an accident, are injuries and death and health care costs that come associated with both. We also, for instance, have a bill that we'll be voting on this week about hands-free driving, because we know that using a phone, texting while driving, or talking on the phone while driving results in greater number of accidents, which has an impact on our healthcare system. But when you look at both of those numbers are relatively small in comparison to the 9,300 deaths we have each year that are related to smoking. So we try to find the right balance on how to address these different issues, and we think that addressing the targeting of young people by tobacco and vaping industries with highly addictive flavored products is something that will have a substantial impact on our healthcare costs, a positive impact on our healthcare costs.
And just in the last few seconds, Dr. Kathuria, will the public health community then push for other kinds of bans as well? Is this the beginning of a bit of a slippery slope?
I don't think it's a slippery slope. I think it's a really powerful impact, and I love to see Massachusetts leading these efforts that the nation can follow. You know, Tobacco 21 policy. The first city in the country to have Tobacco 21 was in Needham, Massachusetts, and followed
later.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to stop you there. That is Dr. Hasmina Kathuria, Director of the Tobacco Treatment Center at Boston Medical Center. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Massachusetts Senator John Keenan, lead sponsor of the Senate bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is our show for today. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.